Growing from its roots as a map-making agency, today's National Geospatial Intelligence Agency requires a surprisingly wide range of talents. I discussed this with Susan Shoemate, chief of the talent acquisition branch at NGA. I started with the most basic question, what does it take to be an analyst there?
Particularly when we are having applicants outside the agency, they call us frequently and say, ask us the same question, what does it take? So the really good answer is not so much about majors and not so much about the depth of experience, but what it takes to become a really good analyst at NGA is critical thinking, creativity, curiosity, and collaboration. We call them like the four C's. We also look for people who have self-awareness and solid writing skills to be a really good analyst at NGA, to find the people, to find the talent that we want to bring in to be that talent of the future who can make great analysts. We're really looking for people who have the ability to solve problems, that enjoy solving problems, the people that are able to take a large set of information and try to make sense out of it. That's that critical thinking piece. We work on teams frequently, so we need that collaborative spirit. And we need someone who can write really well. You're going to have to depict what you are analyzing in a written narrative. So we want good writing skills. But we also have that self-awareness piece.
I wanted to hear more about that.
Yeah, our director frequently speaks about self-awareness. Self-awareness would be the individual who can understand how to do some analysis and how to make a contribution, but to also be the bigger part of a team and figure out what their role is within the context of the agency and within the team. Not so necessarily focused on their product or what they're analyzing, but seeing the bigger picture and being able to understand who they are in the bigger picture. So it's not specifically about just about what they're doing and their contribution is, but how am I as a person able to contribute to the larger picture with this team and be part of that group? So that's the kind of thing we're looking for, self-awareness.
And you also have a culture, because a lot of what happens here is secret, it is classified,
right.
It is endemic to the security of the United States. So that brings an element into the culture that's somewhat, another situation would be at odds with all of those qualities of collaboration and openness and curiosity. So how do you manage that mix in people or define that?
So when we're looking, when we're doing either applicant screening or we're doing in our interview process is where we gain a lot of that information, is through the interview process. Because we ask the technical questions, but we also have a series of what we call more like the behavioral questions. Tell us about a time that you served on a team and tell us what you learned from that experience. So we try to look at a multiplicity of questions that we will ask in the interview process. Finding those skills is many times asking the right questions. In the future, we're looking at more of a pre-hire assessment program. We'll be able to use some actual tools to help us with the pre-assessment piece. We're in the works right now. So for today, what we're looking at mostly is we have a process that we are looking at a resume review where we basically look for the background of that person and their educational
situation. And just a quick question, do you look at resumes individually? You don't run them through algorithm readers and that kind of thing?
That is correct. I have a team of recruiters and they look at every application that comes through and they make some assessments as to whether or not they meet the mandatory qualifications and the desirable qualifications. So interesting, because part of the questions that applicants ask us regularly is, how do I make my resume the best it can be? And we tell them, start with your mandatory qualifications. When we look for applicants, we look for 100% of the mandatory qualifications. They have to have that.
What are some examples of those?
We're looking for someone who has experience working on a team. We're looking for someone who has experience that is specific to whatever job we're looking for.
And they might have to be a programmer, an ESRI, for example.
Right.
For some cases, you might need that.
That could be one of them. So depending on the job, some of those basic requirements are going to be different. if it's something in our STEM areas, the scientific area, it's going to be very specific to knowledge base or in the IT area. Where if it's maybe an entry-level analyst, we might be looking for some very global skills, and that's where we would ask for some experience that you've done some research. You have experience with research. That most college students have had some experience with research. So that might be one of them. And the applicant would have to demonstrate in a resume or a cover letter that they've met that requirement that's mandatory. We also add into our announcements what's desirable. So if the applicant can provide us information that shows both mandatory and desirable, that puts them much closer to being able to go to a hiring advisor, hiring manager, who will look at their applications, and then a panel will decide who they want to actually interview.
We're speaking with Sue Shoemate. She's chief of the Talent Acquisition Division at the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency. And do you hire people right out of college? Do you hire people mid-career? What's kind of the scope or the curve on which you take people in?
We do both. And what you will see on our website is, as we're moving to our external recruitment strategy being largely focused on entry-level hires. So those would be people right out of college, or people with maybe career switchers, people who don't have a lot of experience, entry-level hires. We also have, though, the more seasoned, experienced folks that we're looking for, but we're looking for them less often than we do the entry-level hires. And there's a good explanation for that. The agency very recently stood up a career service model. And in this career service model, what we're doing is we are taking our current employees and looking at how we shape their career within their career service or in their level of expertise. In that career service, we're looking for opportunities to grow individuals into having a larger knowledge of their career service and their field of knowledge. We also do rank in person. So a person can either compete for jobs within their career service, or they can be promoted through a rank in person process. So the goal is to shape the workforce so they can grow into these higher level jobs, the more technical or the more managerial jobs. So that's why you're seeing fewer external hires. Doesn't mean we don't need people that have those levels of expertise, but probably not as much because we're trying to grow our own workforce.
A lot of agencies grapple with the problem that sometimes people that are really good technically or in an engineering or scientific skill, they're terrible at management.
Right.
So they try to find a way to promote those people so they can get salary, prestige, the things that go with promotion, but still do what they're really good at. Do you have that kind of bifurcation here too?
So in the career service model, we're looking at more the technical experts and the managerial experts, trying to figure out, as you're growing your career, helping people to be exposed to those experiences that will help them promote their skills and help them build their profession and their career in the agency. So we have a whole leadership initiative here where we're trying to help people to become better leaders. And we're also, through this career service model, trying to look at how do we give people who have never supervised an opportunity to be a team lead before they become a supervisor. So it's the model is to try to help people get the experience they need to grow and contribute in a way that fits them as well as the agency, while still challenging them to take on new assignments and to look at new opportunities, because the best way to fulfill your role in an agency is not to reside in one position forever. It's to say, I'm going to out of my comfort zone, but I'm going to go over and we're going to put you here so you can have another opportunity to grow. And that helps the agency and it helps the employee both.
Is this the kind of place where someone could come in entry level and stay a whole career?
Absolutely.
Does that happen much?
Absolutely. And I think I think with today, you know, it will be interesting to see, you know, after I'm long gone, it will be interesting to see that
it's going to be 40 years or so, right?
Of course. But the new hires that we bring in today, I will be so excited to see how many of them choose this as a long-term career, because the person who wants to come here, this is an incredible incredible opportunity for people to come into an agency and grow their career and find opportunities that are abounding inside the agency and grow with. What we're finding today in our society today is I don't think as a society we spend a full career always at one place. People like to have opportunities inside agencies and then move to other agencies and to try to better themselves through those professional opportunities. So not only with an NGA, but within the intelligence community, we have the joint duty assignment, which you might be aware of. And we endorse our employees to have that opportunity and to go to other agencies to learn and bring back. It's ability to go out and not only learn from the other agency, but to take what you know from NGA and impart it into another organization. So we give opportunities for individuals to grow a career and to spend a lifetime here. We have lots of people who are retiring at 35 years, so it'll be interesting to see the demographics of what happens today and how many people choose this as a long-term career. Certainly from a recruitment perspective, we would want that. We would want to bring on the best and brightest and stay with us. But at the same time, we are really about our people and growing our people and giving them great opportunities. So if they don't find it here and they leave, but we wouldn't want them to. That happens, so.
And how long does it take to hire someone from, say, when you ingest their resume and application to when you can make an offer?
So there are several parts of the process that have some timelines around them. So from the point that we announce something on our website, individuals who happen to look at our website to say, gosh, I might be interested in working for NGA, will see two types of announcements. They'll see an AON, which is an assignment opportunity notice, which we announce for 2 weeks. And we close that announcement, and then the information goes off to a panel for review, interview, and selection. We have open and continuous announcements also. Those are positions we're looking for in the long run that we're hiring for, and we're going to open them up and we're going to go out on the road and recruit. Many of them are entry level, so we're out with academic communities, we're out with professional organizations, we're driving people to apply to those jobs, and then we periodically pull from them those announcements and then do some hiring around them, which we're having some hiring events coming up shortly. So the process itself is different for those two announcements. In the AON situation, we run them for 2 weeks. We then screen them through the recruiter, goes to a hiring manager and a panel. They review the applicants, make a decision, and then notify us. We offer the job, and then the person goes into the security clearance process.
Which is anybody's guess how that can go.
Right. So the timeline, it can take up to 120 days for a review process to even make a selection. And that's because we have, because of the panel process. Typically, it doesn't take that long, but that's the timeline that we can give them to review applicants. The security clearance process, we normally would say, takes anywhere from 5.5 to 6 months. And we say that on average. I caveat the word average. We may have people who come in that are already cleared and get through the process very quickly. And then we have others that may take a year or longer to come through the process. It's really driven by the background of the applicant we're bringing in. And to that end, a question we get frequently is, well, I don't have a security clearance. Can I come to work for NGA? Absolutely. We're looking for the best qualified talent to come on and help us with our mission requirements. We will put people through the security clearance process, but we always want to share with them, it's not a quick process. It does take time.
So they can do things that may not expose them to classified material, but they can learn the ropes maybe.
They can't even, for the most part, they don't come on until they're fully cleared.
Oh, they don't? Okay.
They don't. They have to wait until they're fully cleared. The caveat I have to say on that is we've recently started, we started a program with some of our very, very key work roles that we had a mission requirement to bring some people on in a short order. And so we found a way to do some bringing them on board where they weren't working in our facility until their adjudication, until they were cleared. Then they move into the facility. So they were able to do some work in the aero and maritime areas before they actually were coming on board. But that is an exception to the rule.
Let's talk about campus recruiting. Okay. You've got a generation of selfie people and Facebook people, and they're really culturally very, very different from my memory, possibly your memory. And so where do you go? What campuses do you have, specific places you go in the first place? And how does that all work? And what does a job fair look like for a place like the NGA?
So a couple of ways that we approach this. So we, as I've mentioned earlier, we have the career services. Each of them has a really idea of the talent that they're looking for. So we work with those career service advisors and we identify key skills and competencies they're looking for, and then we align academic institutions that we plan to target for that year to help us find those key competencies. Our goal as recruiters are to try to partner with academic institutions not only that have the curriculum we're looking for, we're also looking for a greatest amount of diversity in our applicant pools that we can achieve. So we might be going out onto a college campus and working with the campus, but while we're there, we may also meet with particular student organizations on campus that would have those skill sets, but would also introduce NGA to populations who might not necessarily apply. So that's one way that we approach academic institutions, in working with our career service to identify what they need aligned to the programs. The second piece of what we do, there are IC Centers for Academic Excellence that the monies have been put into those by ODNI, and we partner with those schools. And then there are GEOINT Centers for Academic Excellence that we've stood up in the last year and a half. So we have some partnerships with those schools also. So at the beginning, we are looking at which schools will best have the programs we're looking for. And then the second piece is just being able to go onto the campuses to either work with the full-fledged career fairs today. In some ways, it's visibility building as much as anything else to be on a campus, because you will have applicants from here to eternity waiting to talk to you, and you only get a few minutes with each person. And it's just an opportunity for them to be able to just speak with you briefly, where if we are able to work with a professor on a campus, or we're able to speak to a classroom or work with a student organization on campus, that helps us get closer to people who might really be interested. We can spend more time with them. And one of the ways that we do that is the team I have of recruiters is fine. I mean, we only have so many people that can go so many places, and we know we need to be more places. So we built a program called an ambassador program, and it's sort of a build a recruitment cadre outside of our recruitment team. And what we've done is we went to the agency and we've identified people who are willing to be volunteers, mm-hmm. and they work in four different ways for us. They're either going out to the K-12 when there's a career day and they want somebody to come and speak about NGA as a subject matter expert. We send them there instead of the recruitment.
Sounds like
team.
That would be mitigated more toward 9, 10, 11, 12 than yep. K-12.
Well, we get all kinds of requests, but you're right. That's true. Much more in the higher levels is when they're really requesting us. But you'll be interested to know that we get all the way down to pretty much the sixth grade. I say K-12, but sixth grade is where it about starts.
Let me just remind people who are speaking with it's Sue Shoemate. She's chief of the Talent Acquisition Division at the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency. So that's one way. Tell us the other three.
So the other three with the ambassador, they will go with us on events. When my recruiters are going out, we're out meeting with these academic institutions. We've got the subject matter expert right with us, talking to them about those skill sets and about the jobs we have. The third piece is we're building some hiring advisor capabilities where that actually when we're going onto a campus, if we decide this is a location we want to go and make some offers on the spot, they're helping us make those decisions right there on the spot. And then the fourth piece is we're just trying to have them help us grow relationships with academic institutions where we can't be. If they can help us build those relationships, we're really excited about their support. I guess at the final piece, it's we're trying to actually call it a NGA Talent Scouts. Help us find people that you would want to have come to work for us and refer them, if nothing else.
And how do you find yourself competitively, say on a campus fair where, you know, the top talent always has lots of jobs coming to them, and sometimes from very well-paying places that might pay, I mean, you know, I have a couple of recent grads, and some of their contemporaries could go out and make $80,000, $90,000, $100,000 a year right out of school in some professions. Clearly, that doesn't happen in the federal government.
Right.
So how do you bridge that, the pay and some of the restrictions of the federal government against the mission that's pretty exciting?
Well, it's such a really great question, because we think about that all the time. How the question we have is, are we going to the right places to get the top talent? And once we're there, how do we compete with the Googles and the Apples and all the other big companies that are out recruiting and paying larger salaries for us? It's interesting that we get a lot of applicants. We always have far more applicants than we have positions open. So people are interested in coming here. One of the things that's really compelling is our mission. People come to us because they want to do something good. If you look at the generation today, what do they want most of all? They want some balance in their lives, work-life balance, which NGA provides tremendous opportunities for work-life balance. And what do they want? They want something meaningful. I want to be a part of something important. And our mission is one that's very important. People come here because they have the opportunity to contribute to this incredible GEOINT mission that we have, and that's meaningful to them. So where we can't compete, and many times we don't compete. You know if you have the top ranked student out of this particular college that everybody would love to have, that might not be the best fit for us because we might not be able to meet their expectations. But there are a lot of other people who aren't those top-ranked students that are extremely bright and extremely capable, and we compete for them, and they really want to come to work for us.
Now, I have a question about architecture, because I'm interested in buildings, and this building is one of the more unusual structures in the Washington area and probably among federal buildings. And yet, when you step outside, you could be on Mars until you get somewhere.
Right.
And does that, a lot of the kids want an urban environment. They want to be able to walk to and from. There's no metro. So how does that ever figure into when someone actually gets here to take a look? Do they ever scratch their head and say, you know, how do I get from point A to point B?
It's interesting. They might, and it may not be apparent to me. I haven't had that come to me, but I've had sort of the flip side. I'm such a huge lover of this building because it is so gorgeous. And what we do find, what I do see, and we have some on-site hiring events, it's jaw-dropping. When people walk through our doors and look at this, the architecture, if you just noted, of this building, everything else at that moment is gone from them. They're inside of this great organization they knew nothing about many times. They have now the opportunity to be part of the intelligence community for their interview. It is for them a changing moment. And that's why we like to do sometimes on-site hiring events, because those individuals who come in, we had an activity last week, and at the end of the day, I had 12 people standing in front of me, and this one young woman said to me, "This is the best interview I've ever been on." And I said, "Thank you, that's great, but tell me why. I want to know why. Why was this the best interview you've ever been on?" And she had the other folks behind her sort of nodding in unison. She said, "Because I tend to get very, very nervous when I come to an interview." And she said, "When I got here, from the moment I got here to see this building and to go through the activities that you put us through, we do interviewing and team building activities that they go through in the process." She was like, it just diffused me. I felt so comfortable. So going back to your question, probably there is that I don't know about, but nobody really speaks to that once they get here. They're just so enchanted by being able to come into this building and work.
Sue Shumate is chief of the Talent Acquisition Branch at the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency. Share this interview with colleagues. Go to federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive and click share with friends.